I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I was not there for that exchange between Mike and that caller, but just the tone of that guy's voice is one of my all-time favorite of these opens, Joe. I just love that. I'm mocking you. It's perfect. It's perfect. All right, enough congratulations. Let's shift our focus. We spent some time talking about the NFL and some players the Bills picked back in April. Let's spend some time with Chris Peters of ESPN, NHL writer and draft analyst for ESPN and ESPN.com, and he's on the Western Hotline right now. Chris, good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's a little weird to me. It's the last day of June. And it strikes me now that we'd be probably trying to arrange to talk with you in a normal year about the guys the Sabres just picked last Friday and Saturday. Instead, all we've got is, you know, whether there's going to be a startup and what it's all going to look like and feel like. And, of course, the draft lottery happened, and even that is complicated. But it's been quite a year, I think.
Yeah, you could say that for sure. And, you know, especially with how the lottery ended up, not knowing who's going to have the number one pick at this stage, and knowing, you know, who has 2 through 8 instead is just a little bit, it adds an interesting wrinkle to the whole situation. And certainly we hope that, you know, there'll be some hockey to be played, and who knows, maybe we'll get a draft sooner than later. If they're not able to get things going again. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really difficult for people in, you know, my line of work and the scouting industry. And it's really, you know, unfortunately for the most part, the people that are most affected are these players that still don't even know when they're going to start their own season, their junior leagues. And most of them have been shut down, you know, since mid-March. So it's been a long time for a lot of these guys, maybe the longest they've ever not been on the ice. So a lot up in the air right now, and just a wild 2020.
I wonder, Chris, how much time you've spent thinking about just how impactful that pause in March when it happened will be to this draft class. I mean, certainly scouts have been watching guys all through the fall and through the winter, but you're talking about playoff seasons here, state tournaments, and other big high-profile events that, you know, certainly junior teams would be sifting through the higher end of that looking for guys to play for them next year. But some guys certainly would be draft candidates too. And I just wonder, like, how incomplete scouts feel like their work was not getting that playoff piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a feeling of a missed opportunity. You know, with any luck, they have a good book on, you know, kind of how they performed last year and kind of can compare that to where they've been this year. I think losing the major international tournaments, the World Under 18 Championship, is a big piece of the puzzle that is missing. It's a great way for guys to make that last impression. not having a regular combine is another major factor. You know, in most teams have been able to conduct their interviews over Zoom and things like that, but to not be able to have the physical testing with the players and not to have the medical elements that can be one of the kind of last pieces of the puzzle of you know, kind of the off-ice component of these players, that's something that I think also, you know, is feeling kind of missed. And then for those players, it's kind of the same deal. If they lost their last chance to make a good impression, they lost their opportunity to impress at the combine, to look a GM in the eye and kind of give them a real good feel for who they are as a person and player. And so that is an impact too. And the other thing that'll happen on the back end of this, now these leagues could restart before the NHL draft happens.
Right,
so
right.
What do you do then? You know, in that, and how much stock do you put into the beginning of this season? Players have put in the time, hopefully, if they have the ability to work out, to get in better shape, to do different things, to prepare. And, you know, their body composition could be changed by next season. There could be a lot of different pieces of information that are new to scouts before the draft actually happens. So that's another major factor that we just don't know exactly how it's all going to play out yet.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 7 months from March to, you know, through September. And, yeah, I mean, if the USHL and the NAHL and everything in Canada gets up and running, then, I mean, I would think teams would kind of want to redeploy. Now, I don't know if they'd want to take a wrecking ball to the work they've done already and, like, dramatically change things, but that's a lifetime opportunity for guys to work on their, you know, their strength and their, you know, this off-ice conditioning. I mean, a kid at that age can change dramatically in that window of time.
Absolutely, yeah. Physical maturity, it can, I mean, that's one of the reasons that there's been some, you know, push in some sectors of the hockey community to move that draft back another year to being a 19-year-old draft. But, you know, it's just, there are so many different things that are going to come into play. And I think, you know, in terms of what scouting staffs will do is, you know, I don't think that there can be so many drastic changes from one year to the next in terms of the way that you would slot these players, because you're looking at that projection. But if you see, you know, if there's a major injury, if there's something else that kind of happens that would knock them off of their developmental trajectory, then you do have to make those kind of decisions and say, you know, how much risk are we willing to take if we have new information that causes us to reevaluate the way that we've made a board. So, yeah, I mean, this is a completely unconventional year. I know that, you know, a lot of the scouts that I had talked to were kind of hoping that they might do the draft before the restart. A lot of general managers obviously didn't want that because the draft is such a great opportunity to reset your roster with trades and, you know, and to compile picks. And it can be a real rebuild especially for rebuilding teams, a huge event. But the scouts, all their work is essentially done. And now they kind of have to sit on it and hope that, you know, we have a draft here before too much new information comes out next year. And I think the most prepared scouting staffs are going to be the ones that feel the best about where they're at right now.
How much of a sense, Chris, I mean, you mentioned, you know, talking to scouts, how much of a problem do you envision the border being? You know, because if that extends into the fall, I mean, I would think that there's plenty of kids that want to go play and, you know, if they're lucky enough in the OHL or whatever, but even like the CCHL, the BCHL, like these junior A leagues that produce a lot of college players, like I wonder about the border.
Yeah, I mean, I think the border is an issue. A college campus's opening is an issue. You know, there are a lot of different things. And certainly you're dealing with, if you're the CHL, you're dealing with teams on both sides of the border. You're dealing with potentially different rules from different municipalities on gatherings. And, you know, if you're a junior hockey club, you cannot make money without a gate. You cannot make money without fans. And you cannot really operate without fans. And so if you have anything, I think in the WHL, they already said if there is any ordinance that says that they have to have under 50% of their building capacity or under 50% of their capacity, they won't be able to resume. And so that's a huge thing. Then you're also talking about import players. You know, what are they able to enter the country? If you're going into Canada, you have to, you know, self-quarantine and you have to get back earlier. And there are all these different things. Some junior teams are going to be losing their players to the NHL teams that drafted them for this playoff run. And you don't know how long you're going to be without them. So there are a lot of different things that kind of have to come into play. And there's so much that we don't know. I know that, you know, the European leagues in particular are pretty hopeful that they're going to be able to start by October. And I think the KHL even has an early season tournament that they're potentially going to hold. That's in August, I believe. USA Hockey is supposed to be holding their World Junior Evaluation Camp in Plymouth, Michigan, coming up. That's another event that scouts could potentially be at. As of right now, that is on. That's supposed to start in late July, where they have 44 players coming in from around the country. I'm still a little bit surprised that is still going to happen. But a lot of those guys are draft eligible, and so of course they're going to go and try and showcase themselves a little bit more. So it's there are so many things that we don't know, but obviously it has a gigantic impact on the hockey landscape as a whole, and it's going to be very difficult to navigate for the players, for the administrators, for the NHL teams. I mean, I wish I had better answers, but it's just we're still kind of at the mercy of this virus and what happens with the numbers going up right now.
Yeah, boy, no doubt. I saw a piece, I don't remember where now, there were different commissioners, AHL commissioner, the USHL commissioner, and maybe another. And the USHL commissioner basically said, like, the same thing you just said. Like, if we can't have buildings with fans, then, like, that's it. Like, there's no way we're starting a season. And, you know, I think any junior league would certainly fall in line with that. We're talking with Chris Peters, ESPN, NHL writer and draft analyst. All right, so the way it shook out on Friday, like, how embarrassed, if at all, should the league be that they allowed this to happen? Because I think it's a pretty tough look right now that the potentially, say, Pittsburgh or Toronto, if they start up and play, get bounced in the first round, they've got a 12.5% chance at Alexi Lafreniere, and that's obviously not what you intend when you have a lottery, I don't think.
Right, yeah. It's not a great look. It could look worse. You know, let's say Edmonton gets another first overall pick. Let's say Chicago with three recent Stanley Cups gets a first overall pick. I mean, those are the types of scenarios that you know, have you've opened yourself up to. But I think, you know, in the end, there was no good solution. I think that you had to get, you know, I would have liked to have seen that they kept the lottery to the eight teams that were in that, you know, that basically were already knocked out. And then those are the eight teams that have a chance at the number one pick. That would have been my personal preference. But I also understand the fact that if you play in a playing game and you basically get five games to try and extend your season and you lose out, I think it would be it'd be a pretty empty feeling, especially for those teams like a Chicago that was already out of it. You know, that would have been a pretty difficult, you know, look for them. And they're like, hey, we don't even have a chance to get to win the lottery. So I think the NHL did the best they could given the circumstances. I don't think it worked out in the best way for them, but I do think that there was some intrigue in terms of what it created. I mean, certainly, you know, it helped them dominate the news cycle for a little tiny bit there.
Yeah.
But in the end, you know, I think it worked the way that they basically the only way that it could. And of course, we have the lowest ever possible seed get the number one pick in an NHL draft lottery ever. So, I mean, that's just, it's like 2020 in a nutshell. So,
right. I guess
what can you do?
I guess if it was going to happen, this was the year to have it happen. Yeah,
exactly.
I hear that. We'll get to the prospects at the very top here, but the Sabres end up at pick eight here. And I'm wondering what you think of their chances of, I mean, I don't think you get a player that can play for a year or two anyway. Would you think trading that pick might be a good idea for them, considering how long it's been now, nine seasons with no playoffs or even in the play-in round? They finished one point out of the play-in round. What do you think they should do at pick eight?
Yeah, you know, I think they certainly would need to have something, you know, pretty significant coming back the other way. I do think that they're in a range where they're going to land an impact prospect and a player that's going to significantly improve, you know, a prospect pool that's kind of only okay. You know, Dylan Cousins is an exceptional prospect. They have, you know, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has a tremendous upside, but I still think there's pieces that need to be put together there. And you're right. I don't think there's anybody that they would land that's NHL ready. There's not a guy that's going to come in and help you immediately that's going to be available there at eight, but there are going to be some really good options for players in various positions that you have to at least consider. And one of the ones that I think they're really going to consider, you know, is looking at some of these dynamic forwards. There's a good chance that one of those guys that's kind of been in the consensus of, you know, top five, top six guys could potentially slip down to eight. And, you know, that's like a Marco Rossi, a Cole Perfetti, Lucas Raymond, Alexander Holtz. You know, those are guys that have dynamic offensive talents that could, you know, potentially help you in, you know, a year or two. And that's not too bad. There's also a couple of elite defensemen, I think two guys that have been kind of neck and neck for me all year long, Jamie Drysdale and Jake Sanderson, who have, you know, Sanderson's the more complete defenseman. He plays, you know, a physical brand of hockey. He's going to the University of North Dakota next year. And then Drysdale was part of Canada's World Junior team and played for the Erie Otters last year, has more of that dynamic offensive element to his game. But those are the types of players that you're going to find in that range, as well as the Russian goaltender Yaroslav Askarov, which, you know, you may not want to take a chance on just given the fact that you have some prospects in your system at the goaltending position and there's some value there. But I mean, I think you have to keep your options open given the position that the Sabres are in, and trading is certainly an option, but you have to, what's the package that's going to make sense to potentially move away from a guy that I think could potentially be an impact player in the next few years for them? Because I do think that the draft really starts tapering off around 11, and then so you're really in a pretty good range if you're in that, you know, essentially two to eight range. It's pretty, you're going to get something pretty good there.
Yeah. How much, in your experience, Chris, do teams think about positional need versus just the caliber of the prospect? Because as you're talking there about the defenseman, and I guess you can fit Askarov, the goalie, into this too, if I'm the Sabres, if I'm going to hold on to the pick, or maybe even if I'm not, I mean, if I'm going to wait until supposed to make the pick and then trade it, the value of it could fluctuate depending on what's available there. Somebody's really in love with one of these forwards, like you said, maybe you can do pretty well in that trade. What you want is for teams ahead of you in 1 through 7 to quote-unquote need defensemen or maybe fall in love with the goalie.
Right. Yeah. I think that for the most part, teams are going to go best player available. I think that's usually the way it goes. You know, when they build their boards, however, you know, there can be positional preference that creates that best player available. If it's close between a defenseman and a forward, they're usually going to take the forward. If it's close between a center and a winger, they're definitely going to take the center. You know, if it's close between a defenseman and a goaltender, they're going to take the defenseman. You know, you just kind of try to make those picks based on both, you know, the quality of the player. And, you know, you consider your positional needs, but I think especially when you're in the top 10, you can't really deviate a whole lot from best player available. I think that if you try drafting for need in those ranges, you're bound to pass on something that would be better than, you know, if need is your primary focus. So I think usually, you know, best player available, and certainly if that ends up being Yaroslav Askarov, the goaltender, if you think he's the best NHL prospect available, you take him because, I mean, he does have the look of a potential franchise goaltender.
How good an idea is that, a goalie in the top 10, just in your opinion, Chris?
It's a risky one. There's no question. I think, you know, he's in my top 10 as a prospect, and I have not had a goalie in my top 10 ever. So, you know, so he's kind of unique in that regard. I think that there's something special about this particular prospect, but mm-hmm. It is a high-risk position, and we've seen it happen where top prospects have not panned out, and it takes goalies a lot longer. I think, you know, you're looking at a 2 to 3 year to 4 year proposition when you're drafting a goaltender, even one as good as Askarov. So, but I think, you know, you look at what Philadelphia has in Carter Hart, and you look at, you know, even the Washington Capitals have Ilya Samsonov, and you know they have depth at the position now, mm-hmm. Which is a place where, you know, you always need to have a good quality goaltender, and especially a team like the Sabres that's been kind of in perpetual search of a franchise goaltender since Ryan Miller left town. It's something that you have to at least think about. So he's one of those really unique prospects where, you know, I don't necessarily think the Sabres would go in that direction given kind of the way things are going in the organization and their desire to compete sooner. But he is a very intriguing talent, no question.
Yeah. How high did Knight go? 13 last year? Is that where he
13,
went?
13, yep.
I forget. 13. Right. And that's, like, he's a unicorn. He went and played D1 at BC, right, like, as an 18-year-old.
Correct.
And, like, that just very few guys are capable of doing that. So we have 2 years in a row where you've got a prospect that is, you know, I feel like if we talked to you last year before the draft, I probably asked you the same question about Spencer Knight that I just asked you about Askarov. Like, is it a good idea or not? You mentioned, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, like, even Knight was great. You know, like, that was one where I hedged a lot more on him than I have on Askarov.
Okay. You mentioned Dylan Cousins in the course of talking about the Sabres prospect pool. And maybe, you know, he's someone that, you know, I think the fans might be a little gun-shy about asking or seeing the Sabres ask too much from, because we just went through that with Casey Mittelstadt, who, you know, showed up and just has not taken the steps yet and ended up in the minors last year. And so here's Dylan Cousins 1 year removed from his draft year and, like, wondering if he can step in. Do you have an opinion about whether he's ready to be, well, I don't know, a second-line center in the NHL or an NHLer period this year?
I think he definitely deserves a long look and an opportunity to compete for a spot, because I think he took significant steps this season. And, you know, he's got a lot of the good physical attributes. I think the one thing that Casey Mittelstadt did not really have coming in was that physical strength, that base of and foundation of strength. He had all the skill in the world. But, you know, and it also comes down to kind of that competitiveness, that fire, you know, and kind of developing on the fly. You know, and I don't know. I think, you know, sending him to the AHL was obviously the right decision for his development last year, and as frustrating as that may be. But, you know, I think you look at Cousins and he skates like a horse. He's got good physical strength. He's got good competitiveness. You know, the hockey sense is pretty good. And you know, he played in some big situations this year. His production was up in the WHL. He was a leading player for Canada, World Junior Championship, and helped them win a gold medal. You know, I think he's one of the best prospects in hockey right now, no question. I know the gun shyness comes from the fact that Casey Mittelstadt was also at one point one of the best prospects in hockey. But, you know, I think that with Cousins, he fits so well. And I don't necessarily see him being, you know, jumping right into being a top six forward right away. And I think, you know, I look a little bit more at what the Carolina Hurricanes did with Martin Nečas this year. They had him on the wing. They had him at center a little bit as well, but they played him a lot on the wing, which I think was probably best for him. Didn't have huge minutes, played about 13 or so minutes a game. And he was on their second power play unit. He was getting opportunities like that. I think that's a really good thing. And they kept him in the AHL. Now, you can't do that with Dylan Cousins. You have to. That's one of the factors that you have to consider. Yeah. But he does have that ability to, I think, jump into the NHL roster, play down the lineup a little bit, be given too much too soon. And I really think, like, a guy like Ralph Krueger can help cultivate that talent with a player like him, and giving him only what he can earn. So yeah, but I think Cousins is a really interesting prospect. I think he's one of the best, you know, best I've seen this year in terms of growth from draft to this point.
And finally, I said we'd get to the top here, but we'll just a quick thought on the top end of the here. Lafreniere is number one without question in your mind. Is Byfield close, or is it just a no-brainer?
Yeah, I think Lafreniere is certainly number one. You know, there's just you really can't miss with that one. And I think that the difference between him and Byfield is, you know, Byfield is much more about a projection, and I think his projection, his ceiling, is going to be very similar to Lafreniere, but that comes with a little bit of added risk, where Lafreniere has, you know, I think his floor is probably, you know, if what he is right now is his floor, that's pretty darn good. So I think that he's got an opportunity to make an instant impact. But yeah, those two guys to me are the top one and two. I think whoever, you know, if LA takes Byfield, they're going to have a tremendous talent there. And Tim Stutzel, who's number three, is another guy that I really like as a player, and I think he's going to have a nice career as well. So it's, you know, at the top of this draft, it's fantastic this year. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and I think that even goes right down to number eight.
Thanks for all this, Chris. Big fan of the work, and appreciate all the time today, man.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.